two of you, resulting in you banning Stanton from the ruins, which eventually forced Lazarus to intervene and escort Stanton away before it escalated even further. Several hours later, on Lazarus's request, you met up with him on the outskirts of Aldford, where the two of you had a heated argument of your own, which eventually descended into violence. After a vicious brawl, you managed to subdue Lazarus, which prompted him to reveal to you that he and his companions are criminals belonging to a thieves' guild, and are directly responsible for the unrest that has gripped Iberia. With this latest revelation, you understand a bit more of Stanton's treatment of Lazarus and his companions. However, you can't help but question just how truthful either of them are being anymore. Collect more information before making a decision. Evidence supporting the adventurer's story, 2/? Evidence supporting Stanton's story, 2/? Difficulty, very hard. Reward, unknown. Penalty for failure, unknown. Lazarus might have been lying for all you know, a cynical part of myself said as I dismissed the quest update. You won't know for sure until you actually get the feed, and that won't be until Sunday. He might just be stalling. Yeah, and all the references to the devils Constantine mentioned the other day, another part of my mind countered, rehashing the very argument that had caused me to ruin the snakeskin. But what he said made sense and pieced together a lot of things we couldn't find out on any Iberian feeds. Also, why would he openly admit to causing problems in the city if he really hadn't? Sure, but... My subconscious wasted no time in replying before I shook my head viciously, my voice echoing through the empty crafting hall. Ugh! Taking a deep breath, I did my best to keep my mind blank as I cleaned up my workspace and turned to leave the portion of the crafting hall that had been dedicated to leather crafting, deciding that what I needed the most right now was a walk to clear my head before I attempted to craft anything else. Damaging or ruining several pieces of the high-quality snakeskin when I was trying to fashion it into armor would definitely not improve on my mood. Leaving the room, I walked through the quiet crafting hall, none of the new arrivals to Aldford so far sharing my habit of waking up early to get to work. Though, to be fair, there had been a handful of adventurers that had still been awake and working on their own projects when I'd arrived at the hall, just before 5 a.m. On second thought, scratch that. I think someone's in the foundry, I corrected myself, as a repetitive banging sound echoed from an adjoining hallway that split off from the main building. Curious to who might be up this early, I decided to follow the sound of noise and changed my direction towards it. The sound gradually grew in intensity as I approached the foundry and pushed the large doors leading into it open, revealing the familiar form of Jenkins, sitting at the forge, already covered in a heavy sweat from his work. I should have figured that if anyone was here this early, that it would be you, I called out. Jenkins grunted, turning around to look at me with an odd expression.
Should be no surprise that I'm here. I stopped in nearly an hour ago to say good morning while you were carving all that leather.
I looked at the man sideways, a confused expression on my face. You did? I don't even remember.
Explains why you didn't reply then,
Jenkins replied with an idle wave of the hammer before turning back towards the forge. Sorry, Jenkins, I said as I crossed the room. I'm distracted and have a lot on my mind lately.
Figured as much,
the man acknowledged as a rhythmic pounding sound filled the air again.
You walk around like the whole town sits on your shoulders.
Perhaps a certain noble who has seen storming back into town yesterday evening is the source of your distraction.
Leandra's voice echoed out from inside the new forge that sat in the center of the room, causing me to flinch slightly in surprise.
Leandra! I didn't know you were here too,
I exclaimed, while turning away from Jenkins and moving towards the Toolshar's voice, eventually spotting him lying inside the nearly completed forge with a heavy chisel in his hand.
Where else would I be?
He questioned.
Still asleep, maybe? Bah! I am an old man. Even in this world, anything more than 6 hours is a blessing.
Old or not, you still work more than anyone else here, I replied.
Work is life,
Leandra stated.
The day that I stop moving is the day that I die. Besides, I am curious to see if your idea for the forge here will bear fruit.
Too true, I agreed with a chuckle, knowing exactly how the man felt. But to answer your earlier question, partly. The rest of my worries belong to the adventurers that he brought with him.
Worries that will lead to troubles?
Leandra asked, a note of caution in his voice. More like worries that raise uncomfortable questions, which in turn bring troubling answers, I said, seeing Leandra start to crawl his way out of the forge.
Ah, the Toolshaw replied with sudden understanding. Then perhaps I can take your mind off your troubles with some good news.
That would be wonderful, I said excitedly, as Leandra finished extricating himself from the forge and pulled himself up to his full height.
Well, first thing,
the lion-headed man began with a dramatic wave at the forge.
I proclaim this new forge ready for use. All we need to do now is stoke it and see if your idea proves to be fruitful.
That's great, I exclaimed, clapping my hands together as I looked over the forge. I can't wait to try it out.
I do hope it works, Leandra told me with a momentary look of worry. Metals are starting to become a growing concern. Despite the quantity that we've managed to stockpile so far, the amount we are finding has dropped drastically. Unless we discover a more reliable source in the coming weeks, we are going to start experiencing shortages.
I know, I said with a nod, understanding the architect's concerns all too well. Hopefully this new forge will be able to smelt the metal we've recovered from the tower. Gods know we have enough of that lying around.
It may end up being a case of using golden nails, depending how valuable the metal ends up being,
Leandra commented, turning to look at Jenkins as he walked over towards us.
But better for us to do that than to have the town's construction stagnate.
Metals aside, Leandra told me earlier what you're planning to do with the forge. And I'll have to ask, do you think it will really work?
Jenkins asked me uneasily.
I don't know anything about all this ether that you found, but do you really expect cutting a few channels in the forge and letting it mix with the coals to do anything?
I don't know, to be honest, I told Jenkins with a shrug. If anything, I expect it to react violently and possibly explode. Jenkins stared at me with his mouth slightly agape.
What?
I've already tried bringing the original forge to as hot as it could possibly go, and truthfully, I'm surprised it didn't cause it to crack from all the heat, I told the smith with a shrug, motioning towards the smaller forge that he'd just been working on. I figure scaling this one up to be larger and hotter can't hurt, but really at this point I'm just throwing ideas at the wall.
So, as I understand it, you're gonna pour pure, highly concentrated mana into the roaring fire and see what happens?
Jenkins repeated incredulously. Pretty much, I said with a shrug. I'll start with a small amount and see what happens first.
Great.
Jenkins replied, completely deadpan.
When in doubt, add ether.
Leandra chimed in with amusement before a thoughtful expression crossed his face.
But not to the wood. We found that doesn't work well.
What do you mean?
Jenkins asked, looking at the Toolshaw with confusion.
Why?
It causes the wood to explode, unfortunately.
Leandra replied wistfully and shook his head.
Ruined my favorite apron that day. I was never able to get all the blood out of it. Perhaps I added too much. I will have to try again another time.
Jenkins glanced between Leandra and me, clearly struggling to keep his expression under control.
Remind me to go stand behind the doors when you start adding ether to the forge. As curious as I am to see if your idea will work, I won't come back to life if I'm blown to smithereens like you two will.
Plus, it would upset Sheila if she had to put you back together again, I offered to Jenkins as Leandra began to prepare the forge for lighting.
She frets enough from the scrapes and scratches I get while working,
Jenkins said with an exasperated look.
I would never live it down.
Now that I think of it, I haven't seen much of your bride-to-be in the last few days. At least not since my assistants have learned to heal themselves from their mishaps,
Leandra added, pausing from his work at the forge for a moment to look over at Jenkins.
She is keeping busy, I trust.
She is,
the man acknowledged as we moved to help the Toolshaw in getting the forge lit.
She started up a small chapel in town with a handful of adventurers that want to become acolytes of the Dawn Father. There is quite a bit of study involved, both mystical and scripture.
I can imagine,
Leandra replied as he lit the forge and waited for the coals to start burning.
Hopefully, though, we won't be needing her or any of her acolyte services today.
Hopefully,
Jenkins echoed in complete agreement. We continued to chat amongst ourselves as the forge slowly began to build in heat, the temperature of the room rising in sympathy. The easy camaraderie between us quickly had the stress of Lazarus's news fading off my shoulders as I eagerly watched the intensity of the now blazing forge increase, until I finally deemed it ready. That should do it, I said, casting a warning glance at Jenkins as I pulled a jug of ether out of my inventory and began to unscrew the cap. If you were serious about putting some space between us, now's the time.
To be safe, I think I will,
Jenkins replied quietly, every inch of his expression showing that he wanted to stay beside Leandra and me.
Just in case this gets out of hand, and we need to react quickly.
It should be fine,
Leandra offered with an understanding nod.
Maybe. Hopefully.
We will see,
Jenkins said, shaking his head at the tool shard before stepping away from us.
Fingers crossed, right?
Right, I affirmed, as I lifted the jug and motioned for Leandra to show me where he wanted the ether. Let's try a little at first and see what happens.
Of course,
he replied, guiding me towards a channel cut into the side of the forge.
Pour slowly and let it drain through the channels.
Following the man's instructions, I held my breath while I lifted the jug and began to pour out the ether stored inside it into the forge. I saw the familiar glow of the ether briefly as it left the jug and vanished into the stone channel that Leandra had carved. Watching the tool char for a sign to stop, I poured nearly half of the jug into the forge before his hand sliced out, warning me to stop. Do you see anything? I asked, capping and putting the jug back into my inventory to free my hands.
A moment,
he replied, motioning for me to follow as we walked around to the mouth of the forge and peered inside, seeing the blazing red-hot coals.
It may take time to react, assuming it even does at all.
Waiting in anticipation, the two of us stared into the forge nervously, waiting for some sort of visible reaction to show that the ether had taken effect, be it either a violent explosion or something else. The seconds ticked away slowly as the two of us continued to stare. Disappointment slowly building until well over a minute had passed.
Perhaps we could add more,
Leandra suggested.
We may have not. Oh!
Almost as if they had heard the catman's words, all of the flames inside the forge suddenly intensified with a loud rush of air and turned a bright azure color, causing Leandra and me to cover our eyes from the brightness. Blinded from the searing wave of light, I raised my arm to protect my face just as I heard a chime of triumph, followed by a message appearing in the center of my vision. You are the first settlement to create an etherfire forge. Congratulations. You have gained 500 renown.
It worked!
I shouted, opening my eyes as the intensity of the etherfire forge began to dim, eventually evening out to a brightness that was bearable to look at. I heard Leandre exhale in relief before clapping his hand on my shoulder.
We were first, too,
he said excitedly, having seen the same notification that I had.
You guys did it!
Jenkins shouted from across the room as he jogged his way over towards us, his face completely in awe as he stared at the azure-tinted fire in the forge.
It looks stable, too!
It does, I agreed while watching the flames carefully for any sign of a runaway reaction that would be cause for concern.
What are you waiting for, Lirian?
Leandra asked me, his voice sounding impatient.
Try to smelt the shard that you recovered. We have no idea how quickly the forge will burn the ether.
Right,
I replied, tearing my eyes off the azure flames as I reached into my inventory and pulled out the foot-long shard of metal that I had taken from the Aerovian Tower. Let's see if this does the trick. Grabbing a crucible, I tossed the shard inside and gently pushed the ceramic container into the mouth of the forge with a long pull, careful not to knock it over in my haste. Waiting patiently, I focused on the tip of the shard that was protruding from the top of the pot, silently praying for it to melt. If this new forge was unable to smelt the strange metal, then I had no idea what I was going to do. Minutes passed as heat bore down into the crucible, and by extension the shard within, all three of us staring at it in anticipation, oblivious to the sweat that poured down our faces. Little by little, The shard took on a glassy sheen, losing its dark coloring as it slowly turned gray, eventually beginning to sag, its tip vanishing into the pot as it began to melt.
"It's melting!" I exclaimed,
feeling a second wave of excitement course through my body as both Jenkins and Leandra let out similar cries of joy.
"Now if only we can bring enough metal back from the tower,"
Jenkins said excitedly while wringing his hands together.
"Then our metal problems will be solved for a while."
"Let's see how easy it is to work with first,"
Leandra cautioned, motioning me to pull out the crucible.
"Try crafting it into something."
"Any suggestions?" I asked, as I reached into the forge with the pole and latched it onto the crucible, lifting the red-hot pot out of the heat.
"Axe head,"
Jenkins suggested.
"I'm gonna take one last crack at the tree today before tearing the town hall apart. I'll need all the extra tools I can get my hands on."
"In that case, one axe head coming up,"
I replied as I set about pouring the liquid metal into an ingot mold, surprised to see that it was a dull azure color when molten, a small tag pointing to it as it dripped free of the crucible. Ether-touched iron slag. Ether-touched? I repeated to myself mentally, careful not to let any of the metal drip as I set the crucible back down. Is that because of the ether in the forge, or is that what it used to be before? Pushing my question aside for the moment, I focused on working with the still-hot metal, trying to shape it into the axe head that Jenkins had requested, immediately finding that the metal was extremely difficult to work with. Cooling rapidly and unevenly back to its dark tint, I found myself hard-pressed to keep up with the hardening metal, as it refused to shape itself from under my hammer evenly, leaving the finished axe head uneven and oddly shaped. "Damn," I cursed after a moment, realizing that the metal was no longer malleable. "This metal cools really fast. I barely had enough time for more than a handful of strokes before it hardened."
"If I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, I never would have thought it possible,"
Jenkins agreed, looking over my shoulder at the axe head.
"Though, for a first attempt with an unknown metal, that isn't too bad."
"It seems that unless it can be kept nearly molten, speed is more important than form when shaping this ether-touched iron,"
Leandra noted, his head slowly nodding in thought. "Seems like it," I replied, noticing that the single poorly crafted axe head had raised my blacksmithing experience by nearly 40%. Blacksmithing, level 13, 38%. "We need to get more of the metal at the tower back to Aldford," I thought, my eyes widening as I inspected the axe head, seeing its description appear in my vision, followed shortly after by a second notification. With how much experience that one axe granted me, I could end up reaching level 20 in blacksmithing by this time next week. Ether-touched axe head. Item class, magical. Item quality, poor, minus 10%. Damage, 13 to 23, slashing. Strength, plus 2. Agility, plus 2. Durability, 120 out of 120. Weight, 0.75 kilograms. Base metal iron. Special. Ether-touched. You have discovered the crafting prefix ether-touched. Ether-touched. Items with this prefix have been suffused with raw ether, granting it an increased conductivity to mana. All weapons, wands, or implements created from an ether-touched substance gain increased effectiveness when used to channel or cast magic. All armor created from an ether-touched substance gain increased resistances against hostile magic and increased mana reserves. The effectiveness of the increases is dependent on the crafter's skill level and any other materials used in the item's creation.
Damn! That's perfect for me!
I blinked in surprise as I read over the notification, immediately understanding its worth to spellcasters, and in my case, spell swords. If we didn't have enough of a reason to go back to the tower to recover the metal that's there, this would be enough on its own. As it is, this axe is almost just as good as razor, and poor quality on top of it all. If I can work at leveling my blacksmithing skills so I could make a high-quality version of a weapon with this type of metal...
"Looks like we're about to get even busier," I said,
barely able to contain my excitement as I motioned for Leandra to take a look at the axe head stats. "Even with my half-assed crafting, this metal is stronger and sharper than the bronze we've been working with, and based on its prefix, it looks like every single caster in the region, hell, continent, since we're the first to create an etherfire forge, is gonna want gear made from this."
Leandra's eyes widened for a moment as he inspected the hand axe, absorbing the same information about the ether-touched prefix that I had just seen. After a few seconds, he shook his head and looked up at me,
a wide grin crossing his face.
I agree. I think we need to put recovering metal from the tower at the top of our list, now that we have a way to smelt it and an inkling of its true value.
Definitely, I affirmed, my mind already shifting towards how we would be able to move that much metal back to the town. I'll have to think of a way that we can do it. Maybe we can connect a handful of the wagons the settlers brought together to help bear the load.
That may work,
Leandre agreed, his voice taking on a thoughtful tone.
They certainly aren't being used for much now that the settlers have arrived, nor are the majority of the horses they brought with them.
I'm sure that won't last, I replied, my mind already considering ways I could modify the wagons that were sitting unused in the far corner of the town.
Well, since it looks like all the excitement here is over for the morning, I'm gonna get back to work,
Jenkins said, noticing that both Leandre and I had fallen deep into thought as we considered the problem of recovering the metal.
Won't say that I'm not excited about getting some of that new metal to play with, but unless I can sort out that low-hanging branch from the ether warp tree, I'm gonna be spending all my time repairing the town hall while the two of you get to experiment.
I hope it works out, Jenkins, I told the man while motioning to the deformed axe head. You want to use that thing? You should be able to get a decent edge on it.
With how many tools I've gone through trying to cut through the branch, just having one more might make all the difference,
Jenkins replied with a frustrated expression on his face.
If nothing else, we'll be able to see just how well this metal stands up against the tree.
Good luck, Jenkins,
Leandre said to the smith as Jenkins grabbed the axe head and wandered over to fashion a haft for it.
Can I have a moment of your time, Lirian, before you set off as well?
Of course, I replied, watching the toolshar turn to face me. I'm just going to head back to craft some armor for the guild. What's up?
I wanted to let you know that my rest cycle starts today at noon, but that I will likely be gone until Friday morning,
Leandre stated, watching me carefully as he spoke.
My assistants and the foremen from the settlers know what's expected of them, but I'm going to need your help with some of the construction that will be ongoing while I'm offline. Some of the bracing and material that needs to be crafted are beyond their skill, and I won't have the time to get around to it this morning.
That's not a problem at all, I acknowledged, having filled in for Leandre on more than one occasion. Whatever they need, I'm happy to sort out.
Good. Thank you,
Leandre said slowly, taking in a deep breath as he spoke.
But there is something else that you should know, just in case I don't come back.
Don't come back? I exclaimed with alarm. What do you mean? Do you think you're going to quit playing Ascend Online?
I hope not,
Leandre said in a small voice as he clasped his hands together nervously.
But coming back may not be up to me, not entirely at least.
I don't understand, Leandre, I replied, the man's worried expression at odds with everything that I'd known about him. What's going on?
When I log off today, I'm going to be undergoing age regression treatment,
Leandre told me, his eyes fixating on me as he spoke.
At my age, there is a more than even chance that I may not survive the procedure, but with the waiting list so long, this is the first opportunity that I've had.
You're going for age regression? I looked at Leandre in disbelief, never having met anyone rich enough to afford the intensive nano-treatments that could effectively peel decades of aging away from a person, leaving them looking and feeling as they once did in their prime. Leandre, just how old are you? If you don't mind me asking, that is.
It is not a problem at all,
the Toolshar replied with a smile.
In May, I will turn 95.
I had no idea, I said, staring at Leandre in awe. The way you move, how energetic you are,
is how I used to be,
he answered, giving me a sad look.
Before the weight of time pressed down on my bones and diseases robbed me of my health, this game has given me a taste of what I once had when I was younger. And even with the odds against me, I find that even if it costs me my fortune and my life, I must try.
You'll make it, I told Leandre firmly, still trying to wrap my mind around what he just told me, realizing that he was rolling the dice for a chance to turn his body's clock back to my age, or possibly even younger, depending on how he reacted to the treatments. I couldn't help but wonder if I would do the same in his shoes. After all,
who didn't want to have a second chance at life.
We will see,
Leandra said fatalistically, his mood improving instantly now that he had unburdened himself.
But now with that news out of the way, I should bring you up to speed with all the projects that I have on the go, just in case.
All right. I nodded at the Tulshar as he motioned for me to follow him out of the room, unable to stop myself from wondering if this would be the last time I spoke with him.
So, first thing,
Leandra began.
I've crafted the framework for the third longhouse already, and it should assemble easily. All you need to do is...
Chapter 22.
Hi, Larry. Sarah said that you were looking for me.
I heard Rit's voice ring out in the crafting hall as I worked to finish a stitch on the helmet before me, the last and final piece of armor in my day-long marathon crafting session.
Yeah, I called to the merchant, turning away from my work for a second to beckon him over. I have a few armor sets that I want you to put up for sale. I figured it'd be easier to get him to call you in here to show you everything rather than drag it outside.
Fair enough,
Rit started to say as his feet echoed across the room, his voice suddenly catching when he saw the fruits of my labor organized into piles on the nearby tables, sorted by the differences in their design.
Lyrian, there has to be 2 dozen sets of armor here. You made this all today.
Well, not all of it, I told the man, tying off my stitch and tucking it behind a fold of leather. The leather base for the armor I made a few days ago. I was just waiting until I found something I could use to reinforce it all. Thanks to the snakes we fought yesterday, I finally had something to work with.
I heard about that, Rich stated uneasily. I had one of your adventurers resurrect practically on top of me at the quarantine yesterday. He said something about being eaten.
That must have been Connor, I replied with a nod. He zagged when he should have zigged. Didn't stand a chance.
I don't know how you can do it,
Rit said, visibly shivering at my cavalier attitude.
I can stand up to a goblin or an orc without even blinking, but if it's something that can eat me, my knees are all jelly.
Everybody has their fears, Rit, I told the young merchant understandingly. Nothing wrong with that.
Easy for you to say,
the man shook his head.
You can't die. Well, permanently at least.
Doesn't mean we're all eager to experience it, I said, motioning for him to follow me towards the armor that I crafted, picking up the helmet that I just finished. Anyway, want to see what I have for you?
Very much,
Rit said, a note of excitement entering his voice as he looked down at the helmet I was carrying.
Are you looking to sell all of this?
Unfortunately, no, I replied, shaking my head at the man and seeing his expression fall. The majority of this armor is for Virtus members. Considering that they all helped us kill the snakes yesterday, it's the least I can do to make sure that they have a share in the spoils. Plus, I've already handed out a few sets to Cyril and our newest recruits. They all desperately need new equipment.
Are you sure, Lyrian?
Rit asked as we arrived at the first table, his hand going out to stroke an emerald-scaled tunic.
There's a lot of demand for your work in the town.
The guild has to come first, Rit, I said, watching him reach out to pick up the piece that he had just touched. The new recruits aren't wearing anything much better than rags. Making sure that they're protected and outfitted is more important than making a fistful of coin.
I guess,
Rit agreed half-heartedly, his attention largely focused on the armor in his hands.
Is this bone?
Snake bone,
I confirmed as I brought up the item description of the set that Rit was holding. We recovered quite a bit of it from the snakes, and I didn't know what else to do with it at first. But after some thought, I figured I could use some of the ribs for bracing and the heavier pieces to protect the wearer's spine, shins, and forearms. Serpentine Striker Armor Set. Slots, arm, chest, feet, hands, leg, head, shoulders. Item class, magical. Item quality, mastercraft, plus 20%. Armor, 245. Set bonus, 7 out of 7. Strength, plus 7. Agility, plus 7. Armor type, light. Weight, 9 kilograms. Favored class, any martial. Mana infused, plus 15% resistance against arcane spells and abilities. Level 13.
It's somewhat similar to that spider armor you made before,
Rit observed as he carefully inspected the various pieces of armor on the table.
Though the craftsmanship of your work is nothing short of amazing.
No reason to change the successful formula,
I replied, dismissing the item's description from my vision.
Though there's only so much I can do with only leather at hand. I used up all of the chainmail we recovered from the tower, making armor for my group and Freya's group. But I'm sure you'll be happy to know I finally used up all of that glowing spider blood that was lying around.
Thank the gods for that!
Rid exclaimed as he set the armor back down on the table and walked over to the one beside it.
The number of times that I opened the wrong crate and caught sight of that eerie blood with all fangs and claws packed away with it, whew, I can rummage without fear now.
Well, the claws and fangs are still in the crate, I cautioned, despite smiling wide at Rit's statement. So don't let your guard down too much.
Noted,
Rit said with a nod before looking over at the armor stacked on the second table.
This next set here looks thinner than the other one. I take it this set is intended for the spellcasters.
Yeah, I confirmed, checking over the item description one more time as Rit inspected the pile. Serpentine Adept Armor Set. Slots, arm, chest, feet, hands, legs, head, shoulders. Item class, magical. Item quality, mastercraft, plus 20%. Armor, 185. Set bonus, 7 out of 7. Intelligence, plus 7. Willpower, plus 7. Armor type, light. Weight, 6 kilograms. Favored class, any arcane or divine. Mana infused, plus 15% resistance against arcane spells and abilities. Level 13.
Flawless quality, too. Though I never doubted otherwise,
Rit commented while looking over the second set.
I doubt I'll have to try very hard to sell this armor once word gets out. If anything, I'll likely end up breaking up fights between adventurers as they fight over your stuff. How many of these sets are you putting up for sale, and how much?
3 of each set, I replied, motioning for Rit to take a look at the last and final armor set, which was notably heavier and substantially reinforced when compared to the other two. Taking a moment to consider Rit's second question, I brought up the last set's description, reading it over carefully before making a decision. Serpentine Defender Armor Set. Slots, arm, chest, feet, hands, legs, head, shoulders. Item class, magical. Item quality, mastercraft, plus 20%. Armor, 370. Set bonus, 7 out of 7. Strength, plus 7. Constitution, plus 7. Armor type, medium. Weight, 18 kilograms. Favored class, any martial. Mana infused, plus 15% resistance against arcane spells and abilities. Level 13. I want it run as an auction, starting at 10 gold with a 30 gold buyout for each armor set, I told the merchant, clearing the item's information from my vision. I've no idea what the demand will be like, but you can adjust the buyout if it's not high enough.
I think that is reasonable,
Rit replied, turning away from the tables and giving me a thoughtful look.
Some of the new adventurers have a fair bit of coin on them, especially those that have been taking odd jobs with Jenkins, Ragnar, or Leandra. The least we can do is try to make money back off them.
It wouldn't hurt to improve on the guild coffers either, I added, knowing that Virtus collectively had a little less than 200 gold pieces to its name. If the guild keeps growing as it has been, it won't take long before we need a guild hall of our own, and that labor will certainly cost us.
Just keep making pieces like these, and money will be the least of your problems,
Rit told me, inclining his head at the armor on the table.
Mind if I start cutting some of this stuff away now? It's still early evening, and most of the adventurers will start coming back to Oldford when the sun sets. I'd like to get these armor sets set up in the shop before they arrive, in case any of them feel like shopping.
Works for me, I told Rit just as the crafting hall door opened once more, letting Constantine, Thorn, and Marlin into the room.
Yo, Lear!
Constantine greeted with a wave as the three of them approached me.
Figured this would be where you were hiding all day today.
Armor doesn't craft itself, I answered dryly, returning the wave to the trio. What's up?
We've just about finished setting up Marlin's lab, Thorn said, but we've run into a bit of a problem that we were hoping that you could help us with. Crafting helped, specifically.
Oh? I asked, curious about what the three may need. What's the problem?
These are a series of
Marlin began to explain before Constantine cut him off.
Fiddly bits,
he stated, lifting what looked to be a broken length of copper metal that had ruptured violently.
We need a bunch of fiddly bits like this pipe made, so we can finish assembling the alembics. Apparently it controls the pressure of the system, along with a bunch of other stuff that I really wasn't paying attention about.
It allows the solution?
Marlin tried to add before Constantine cut him off a second time. Lyrian doesn't need to know all the details, Marlin, the rogue said, putting a hand on the alchemist's arm. He just needs to copy this, but make it so it doesn't explode under pressure. I may need to know a bit more than that, I replied uneasily, motioning for Constantine to give me the pipe that he held. You said something about valves?
To control the flow of the solution in the alembics!
Marlin blurted out, clearly expecting Constantine to interrupt him a third time.
This valve system couldn't withstand the pressure and exploded.
It looks to be made poorly,
Thorn added as Constantine gave me the pipe he was holding.
Whoever made this was likely half-blind or drunk, possibly both. We didn't think to check it compared to the rest of the equipment. Zethus is giving it a look over right now, in fact.
Well, I can give it my best shot, I said, trying to sound confident as I inspected the broken pipe. I haven't made anything like this before, though.
If it helps with your motivation, once the alchemy lab is set up, Marlin thinks he can use some of the mushrooms we found, along with our stash of yellow thorn, to create a healing potion of some sort, Constantine told me excitedly. I can't tell you how useful that would be to have.
No kidding, I exclaimed, looking down at the broken mass of metal in my hands and giving it a more detailed look. Okay, I'll see what I can do to fix this.
Hang on,
Rick called out while lumbering over towards us while carrying a small mountain of leather armor in his hands, his head barely visible from behind the pile.
Did I hear something about turning mushrooms into healing potions?
You did?
Thorn affirmed, looking at the overburdened merchant warily.
Assuming Lyrian can fix the valve, though.
Lyrian will fix it,
Red affirmed as he turned sideways and turned his head, allowing his greedy eye to land on me.
Right, Lyrian? We can sell healing potions to the adventurers by the dozen for fistfuls of coin, and they'll always come back wanting for more.
I'll try, I said, taken aback slightly by Rit's sudden enthusiasm.
Reagents would be a limiting factor in how much I could produce, Marlin cautioned. The mushrooms can be quite difficult to find in bulk. Nonsense! Why would we go looking for them?
Rit exclaimed, turning himself around once more to look at the alchemist.
Have you never heard of a mushroom garden? I can't say I have,
Marlin replied nervously.
Oh, that may work, Constantine said with excitement. That way we could have a steady supply of everything we need to keep brewing more potions.
Steady supply of horse poop, too,
Thorn added dryly.
Exactly,
Rit said enthusiastically, while motioning towards Marlin with his chin.
Say, while Lyrian fixes that fiddly thing for you, why don't we take a walk together, Marlin? I'm curious to hear what other things you'd be able to brew for Oldford once your lab is up and running. I suppose,
the alchemist said nervously, casting a look at Constantine and Thorn, who both waved him on.
Rit's going to have to make a few trips, Thorn told the alchemist. Can't hurt to hear him out. We'll be here sorting out what exactly we need from Lyrian to fix the valves.
Okay,
Marlin replied, clearly once again overwhelmed at just how in demand his services were.
I'll be right back then.
The three of us watched Rit and Marlin leave, the young merchant wasting no time in starting to fire questions at the alchemist, oblivious to the heavy load of armor in his hands.
Good guy, that Marlin, Constantine said. But if you give him an inch to talk, he'll wear you down with the minutiae of his craft.
I tried to be polite once and lost an hour of my day listening to him talk about differences of shade-grown dustweed versus sun-grown. Thankfully, a weird-looking rope snake interrupted him and gave me an excuse to leave.
Oh, you found noodles?
I asked, taking my eyes off the shattered piece of metal in my hands.
I overheard that one of the new adventurers lost a snake a few days ago.
Noodles?
Constantine repeated, giving me a confused look before shaking his head in negation.
You know what? Never mind. That must have been why Bax was so willing to take it off my hands.
He is a pretty big help, I said, though I really haven't seen him around the last couple days or had a chance to talk to him.
He's always on the move and hard to pin down, Thorn agreed. Last I heard, he and Natasha were helping a group of settlers stake out boundaries for farms to the west of Oldford. Given how many creatures we have running around the area,
That's not exactly an easy thing to do. They'd certainly have their work cut out for them, I said, hearing the doors to the crafting hall open once more as Drace's dust-covered form walked inside.
Lyrian! There you are!
The man exclaimed with a dry cough, trailing a small cloud of dirt behind him as he walked towards us.
I need a favor.
Shit, Drace! What the hell happened to you?
Constantine asked before I could reply.
You look like you've been swimming through dirt!
Ha! Very funny, Drace growled with annoyance. This is how real work looks, in case you were wondering.
Is that what it is?
Constantine sniffed before letting out a mock sneeze.
Ugh, no wonder my allergies are coming on.
What do you need, Drace? I asked, joining Thorn and shaking my head at Constantine's antics. Is everything okay? You spend the whole day digging out that passage?
Yeah, me and a couple of other volunteers,
Drace replied, the cloud of dirt and dust around him settling as he stopped moving.
But the going is slow, and we've already shattered practically all the picks that I made. I need you to make more for me, preferably a dozen, maybe two. With how the tunnel collapsed, we're digging through massive pieces of solid rock.
Damn. Okay. But why do you need me to make them? I asked, not opposed to helping out, but concerned of how much time the crafting would take. Was there something wrong with the ones you made?
Durability and item quality, Drace told me. I'm not skilled enough in blacksmithing to hit mastercraft quality yet, even making the lower-leveled bronze picks. But you are. The mastercraft pick I had this morning lasted about 4 times longer than a regular quality pick.
Oh, damn, I noted with surprise. That's a pretty huge difference.
No kidding, Drace replied. Since we have no idea how far we need to dig, I'd rather us try and conserve as much metal as possible, because once it's gone, we're kind of screwed.
I understand now, I said, thinking more about how item quality played into the overall lifespan of an item. Though our metal problems may not be so bad anymore, I managed to smelt that mystery metal from the tower. Turns out it's something called ether-touched iron and gives bonuses to anything involving magic.
Sweet! Drace exclaimed, his weary face breaking into a smile. That'll be perfect for you and the other casters.
That's what I'm thinking, I replied, nodding enthusiastically. It's a bit of a pain to work with, but I'm sure we'll figure it out in time. I was hoping to put a few wagons together and take the guild out to try and bring back one of the big pieces, though that may take a couple days until we're ready, though.
That's not a bad idea, Drace said. Though you'll have to count me and a few others out of that, unless you want to put the excavation on hold.
That's not a problem, I answered. The metal'll be useful to have, but I don't think it's worth delaying the dig for a day. I was thinking to grind our way through the plains to break up the boredom, since after our fight with the snakes, I'm only a stone's throw away from level 14 now.
I'm pretty sure that Helix and the others will be excited to come, Thorn added. They've been working hard on bringing the new recruits up to speed.
Then I think we're... I started to say before a muffled shout from outside the room caused me to stop and turn towards the door.
I did it!
Jenkins' excited voice called out.
Lyrian, I did it! I cut that stupid branch!
What is it with everyone needing you today, Lear?
Constantine commented just as the door to the room slammed open, swinging wide on its hinges as it revealed an exuberant Jenkins holding a long azure branch in hand.
Lyrian, your axe worked! It cut through the wood like an axe should have!
The man shouted with near-maniacal laughter as he crossed the room, waving the still-glowing length of crystalline wood in the air.
I should have used the stupid thing first, but I waited until I'd blunted all of my other tools!
That's great news, Jenkins,
I exclaimed, my eyes focusing on the ether-warped branch that he held.
That can't be all of it, though.
No, no, it isn't,
Jenkins shook his head as he handed me the branch.
I gave the axe to one of my assistants to cut the rest of the branch down. Now that we know we can cut it, we're gonna have to bring it down in a more controlled manner.
Fair enough, I said, accepting the branch, surprised to find that it was cool and very smooth to the touch. This branch is almost cold.
I noticed that, too,
Jenkins acknowledged.
It was warm when I first cut it, but cooled quickly on the way over here. Though, oddly enough, it is glowing brighter now.
Strange, I commented, looking at the ether-warped length of wood and seeing a tag appear in my vision. But what isn't lately? Ether warped oak branch.
Tell us about it,
Constantine grunted, similar sounds of agreements coming from both Drace and Thorn.
Until we get more of that metal left to fashion any tools capable of cutting it, I don't know what we're going to do with it,
Jenkins said, waving a hand at the piece of wood.
But I don't have any use for it. You can just hang on to it for now, Lyrian. Or toss it into the fire pit, I guess.
I'll hang on to it, I replied, putting the length of crystalline wood into my inventory. It seems pretty durable. Maybe I can make it into something useful when the time comes.
We'll see,
Jenkins replied with a shrug before motioning to the door.
In either case, I'm ready to get back to it. I'm clearing out a place in the storage room where we'll store the rest of the branch as we cut it down.
Works for us, I said, everyone echoing in assent.
Wrapping up, then. Leandra told you he's gone for the next day?
Trace asked me as Jenkins gave us all a wave and turned to leave the room. He did, I replied. I'm covering for him with some of the construction going on in the town tomorrow.
Good. Then I have a few more things to add on to that, since I'm going to be busy with the dig for the next little while,
Trace said, inclining his head towards the door.
Walk and talk to the foundry? If I can get those picks today, we can keep working a bit longer.
Sure, I answered hesitantly, starting to feel the walls around me closing in as more and more work was piled on top of me.
Gotta crack the whip to make sure Lear keeps moving, Constantine chimed in, elbowing me in the side as we started to move. There's too much to do to keep those crafting hands idle.
God forbid you actually pick up a trade skill to help out, I said dryly as the four of us left the room. Then you might actually be useful to have around.
Sure, but at what cost?
Constantine replied, his voice taking on a mock dramatic tone.
Then I'll end up like you, and everyone will want a piece of me. I won't have a chance to turn around without someone asking me for something.
Maybe I should make you help Drace dig out that tunnel, I retorted, seeing a look of panic cross the half-giant's face.
Lear, no.
Drace said quickly.
He'll cause a collapse within an hour. He's a hazard to be around.
I'm not a hazard, Constantine exclaimed. Things just don't always work out for me.
Don't work out? Thorn scoffed. You nearly set Marlin's lab on fire this morning.
Wait, what? I said with alarm, glancing between Thorn and Constantine.
What is it with you and fire, Constantine?
How was I supposed to know that powder was flammable?
Constantine grumbled, waving a hand at the dwarf.
It was in a plain box.
I told you it was flammable, and not to leave it in direct sunlight. But what did you do?
How much is happening around here that I don't hear about? I turned my head to look at Drace while the bickering between Constantine and Thorn began to escalate.
Do you really want to know the answer to that, Lear?
The half-giant gave me a pointed look as we rounded the corner towards the foundry. You know, on second thought, probably not.
Good,
Drace replied with a morbid laugh.
You'll sleep better that way.
Chapter 23 Friday, March 15th, 2047, 7:34 a.m.
How does Leandra do this every single day? The thought pounded through my already exhausted mind as me and half a dozen people strained to lift the framework of the fourth and final longhouse, the rope digging deep into my hands. Forcing myself a step forward, I felt Abaddon's elbow brush my side, the large Araxes' muscles bulging as he bore down on his own rope. I still feel wiped out from all of yesterday's work, and today's barely even started.
A little bit more,
Jenkins' voice called out from behind us as we all continued to claw our way forward, grunts and curses filling the air.
There, that's enough, stop. Second team, hold the frame steady while we fix it in place.
Finally,
Abaddon gasped as the rope in both our hands went slack and we turned back to look at the fruits of our labor.
All done.
That felt like the heaviest one yet. I breathed, the sound of hammers filling the air as Jenkins and his assistants rushed in to stabilize what would become the entire side of the longhouse.
We saved the biggest house for last,
the lizard man breathed,
I feel our trip hunting today will be the easier part of our day.
Huh. I couldn't help but chuckle in agreement, my eye reflexively scanning all the settlers and adventurers as I watched for a very specific Tulshar. Hopefully, but you can never be sure with Leandra. By the time we come back, he might decide that we need to throw a fifth house up for good measure. Assuming he comes back, I added silently to myself as I didn't see the man nearby, meaning that his avatar was likely still back at the crafting hall, working on the automated tasks that Leandra had assigned himself before logging off.
Maybe,
Abaddon grunted as he rolled his shoulders.
But by then, we should hopefully have more hands to go around.
Hopefully, I said, Jenkins's beckoning arm catching my eye as his team finished securing the framework. Looks like I'm needed elsewhere. I'll be back.
Sounds good,
Abaddon called, the large lizard man turning to walk towards a cluster of adventurers and townsfolk waiting for their next task.
I'm going to go sit for a moment. Call us over when you're ready.
Giving the Araxi a grunt of acknowledgement, I jogged over to Jenkins, the man carefully inspecting the entirety of the framework, ensuring that it wouldn't fall over once we moved on to the next stage of construction.
Everything is looking good, Lyrian,
he told me the moment I came into range.
We can start moving in the rest of the smaller frames and start nailing it all together. I know you're set to leave to the tower today, but can I borrow you and the lizards for a bit longer? We're gonna need some muscle moving things around.
That's not a problem, Jenkins, I replied, glancing over the partially assembled longhouse myself. We still have plenty of time before we're set to leave, and I'm hoping to catch Leandra before we do.
All right, great,
Jenkins nodded, his eyes looking over the building and planning out his next steps.
Grab your team and start on the back half. I'll work away up here with mine. We'll meet somewhere in the middle.
Works for me, I stated, before spinning on my heel and making my way back towards Abaddon and the others. The next hour passed with a flurry of construction as we continued to work on building the longhouse, our enhanced strength and endurance allowing us to work faster and harder than any of us could have ever managed back in reality. Heavily muscled warriors carried massive planks that would have required a small crane to hoist, while deft rogues and scouts hammered nails with blinding speed and precision. Any injuries were swiftly mended by a pair of roaming priests, and more than one disaster was avoided by the timely intervention of a mage, catching a falling or shifting object with a force shield. With the majority of the crew having already had several weeks of construction under their belt from other projects around the town, everyone knew what was expected of them, allowing the work to proceed steadily and without any serious complications. We're moving along faster than yesterday, I thought, silently measuring our progress and comparing it against our previous day's effort, which to me already felt like a lifetime ago. It had been an eye-opener for me to step into Leandra's shoes for the first time yesterday, realizing just how much work he had taken upon himself to develop Aldford. It seemed that the man had an uncanny ability to be in multiple places at once, while simultaneously multitasking at each location and giving direction to those around him. I found myself hard-pressed to keep up with all the work that he had left behind for me to manage, as we completed the third longhouse and began to prepare the ground for the fourth. I hope he comes back, I repeated to myself for what had to be the 100th time, as I helped guide a heavy beam into place from high on the framework, held up high by the trembling arms of Helix, Abaddon, and Cadmus.
That should do it!
I called down to the trio after getting a thumbs up from Mir and Huxley, indicating that it was secure from their side.
You can let it go now!
With a groan of relief, the three lizard men gradually relaxed their grip on the thick length of wood that they had hoisted over their heads, each of them happy to see that it remained fixed firmly in place.
Great! Now we just...
I started to say as I jumped back down to the ground, only to be interrupted by Constantine's grumpy shout.
Hey, Lyrian!
He called out as he entered the construction area and walked towards us, his expression already bearing a tired and annoyed slant to it.
Sorry to interrupt, but do you have a minute?
Sure, I replied as Constantine stepped in close to us and motioned for the thunder lizards to form a circle around us. What's up?
Stanton's done his sulking and has called a meeting, right now, of course, he said.
I have no idea what it's about, just that he wants to discuss how we're moving forward after our disagreement the other day.
You think it's a ruse?
Mir asked, her and all the other Thunder Lizards having been kept in the loop with Stanton's antics. On some level, probably, Constantine said. But this time he's invited Lazarus and his group to be part of it. I sent him a message asking him if he knew anything more about it, but apparently he doesn't. Great, I replied as I rubbed the sweat off my forehead. Do we have anyone else in the meeting already? Sierra and Halcyon are there right now, he said. Dre's already left to go dig. Caius, Freya, and the others are getting the wagon ready for our trip. All right, I sighed, looking up at the rest of the group. Can you guys manage here while I go sort this out? I'm really hoping that Leandra's gonna show up soon.
We'll manage,
Helix said confidently, giving me a toothy smile.
This isn't the first house we've helped build, you know.
Thanks, guys, I acknowledged as I stepped out of the group with Constantine and started to pick our way out of the construction site. Making sure to catch Jenkins's attention as we left, I pointed to the town hall while mouthing Stanton's name, only to have him nod in understanding while giving me a sympathetic look. I have to wonder just how oblivious Stanton is to how everyone perceives him, I said to Constantine as we walked. Even people who haven't met him know he's an ass.
Word travels fast in a small place like this, the rogue replied. Plus, I'm sure everybody that had the pleasure of traveling with him probably got their fair dose.
I guess so, I said half-heartedly, while mentally trying to reach out to Amaranth and finding that he wasn't in range of our mental link. Must still be out hunting, I realized with a mental shrug, knowing that the cat had grown bored, sitting around while I'd spent the last 2 days crafting and building. Moving with urgency, Constantine and I made our way back into the town hall and rushed up the stairs into the meeting room, the both of us silently wondering what Stanton wanted now. Pushing open the door, the room was already silent as we stepped through it, everyone turning to look at our arrival.
Larian, thank you for coming on such short notice,
Stanton greeted with a calm aura of politeness that I would have never expected to hear from him, let alone after how we parted ways the other day.
I understand that you are busy this morning.
There's always something to do, I replied, completely caught off guard by his amicable disposition as I looked around the large table to see who else had been invited to the meeting. Sitting to Stanton's left was Veronia, with Lazarus, Sawyer, and Ransom on the noble's right. On the opposite side of the table, Sierra and Halcyon sat near Aldwyn, leaving two empty seats for Constantine and me directly across from the noble. What was it exactly that you wanted to meet about? I asked, moving to take a seat at the table, unable to help but notice that none of the Mages Guild members or Dire were present at the meeting.
I wanted to discuss what happened the other day at the runes, and how we can move forward from our last conversation.
Stanton began, his bright eyes fixating solely on me as he spoke, immediately unsettling me with a piercing quality that I had never felt from the noble before. If I had known better, I would have almost imagined that there was someone other than the Stanton I knew sitting before me.
But I believe that before we can do that, a confession of sorts is in order. Events have progressed far enough for you all to be brought into the fold.
Huh? I grunted with sudden confusion, glancing over at Constantine and Sierra on either side of me and seeing similar expressions on their faces. What are you talking about, Stanton? Brought into what fold?
I will address that in a moment,
Stanton replied, holding up a single finger to keep any further questions at bay.
But until our conflict a few days ago, we weren't certain if you all could be trusted, and we needed to be sure where your loyalties truly were.
You didn't trust us? I exclaimed incredulously, unable to restrain myself after hearing what the man had just said. That's rich coming from you.
What is the meaning of this, Stanton?
Aldwyn growled from the head of the table.
What exactly have you two done?
What we were sent here to do,
Veronia stated in a hard voice as she turned to regard Aldwyn with an unreadable expression.
Ensure that Oldford stays free from any the other noble house's influence.
The other houses?
Aldwyn repeated, his eyes glancing between the pair.
What do they have to do with this?
Please, Frederick. Did you think that House Cenarius would be the only house that would have an interest in a settlement this far beyond Iberia's borders,
Stanton asked.
Or the only house with access to the Mage's Guild to detect the ruptured ley line.
Ever since I was exiled from Iberia, I haven't thought about any of the houses, Stanton. Yours especially.
Alduin spat viciously.
Clearly, Stanton replied, but you're foolish to think that they haven't been thinking about you, especially in light of what's happened in Iberia of late.
Me?
Alduin's eyes widened with surprise.
Why in the world would they give a damn about me?
Veronia grimaced at the Bon, her voice sounding hard as she spoke.
You know exactly why they would give a damn about you, Frederick.
You need to start explaining what the hell you're talking about.